April 22nd, 2011, Steve Gerwick on Gerwick.net. We have an interview now with Rob Conway, former WWE Tag Team Champion, multiple time OVW World Champion and Tag Team Champion with Eugene, Nick Dinsmore. It's a pleasure today to talk to Rob Conway. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing great. The pleasure's mine. I've been looking forward to this interview for quite some time.
Yeah, we've been building a catalog of questions for you once we kind of worked out that we were going to talk to Rob. You've had a very interesting career, I would say. But before we get too far into your career from the start, why don't you kind of update the wrestling fans of what's currently going on with Rob Conway, because we just posted a little clip from Juggalo Championship Wrestling, an internet pay-per-view you were part of on Wednesday night. You know, besides Juggalo, and what is Rob Conway currently up to these days?
Doing a lot of wrestling. I try to wrestle anywhere from 3 to 4 times a week. It's something that if there were more shows, I would wrestle every night. But there's not too many shows on Mondays because everybody's watching Raw live on TV. But I'm wrestling currently. I wrestle for Ohio Valley Wrestling at least once or twice a month, and that's based out of the Louisville area. And then I have the JCW Wrestling, which films the pay-per-views every other Wednesday out of the Detroit area, and then they also have live events at different parts of the country. Something I'm pretty excited about is a new promotion that's starting out of Knoxville, and it's going to be called Next Level Wrestling, and their premier event is May 12th there in Knoxville, so I'm excited about that. And then opportunity that I've had here recently, starting in June, I'm going to start going to Australia for about a week or 10 days at a time and doing multiple shows. So there's another thing that's coming up that's really exciting. And then another show that I do every month is New Focus Wrestling in Evansville, Indiana. And that's one of my, I consider that to be kind of my home show now, because the people of Evansville, I think more than just about any place else in the country, have really embraced Rob Conway as kind of their own. So it's been real exciting. So been staying busy, try to work out every day, and just wrestle as much as I can. I have to say, it's been 14 years now that I've been wrestling, and I think I've just been rejuvenated, because over the last year, it seems as if it's more fun than it's ever been. I mean, it's always something that I have passion for, but just here in the last year or so, I think every show, it's almost like I wrestle like it could be my last, so it's been a lot of fun.
The new promotion you're talking about in Nashville, who is the promoter of that new brand?
Next Level Wrestling, and it's promoted by Devin Driscoll. Devin
okay.
is a former WWE developmental talent that actually did so well in the business world before he got into developmental that when he saw it might take a long time to get to the main roster, he just went back into his regular business and gave up on his dream to be a WWE superstar, but didn't give up on wrestling in general.
Talk about Juggalo Championship Wrestling. I think a lot of people don't know a lot about it. Obviously, it's promoted by Insane Clown Posse, the ICP, who, you know, some people remember had that short stint with WCW on Nitro. How are they to work for, and how are the shows run so far?
The shows themselves are a lot of fun. I mean, the crowd, the energy in the building is really kind of second to none. As far as the ICP guys, both of them, they love wrestling. I mean, I think that was their first love, was wrestling. And then they made their success in the business industry as far as music. But they never stopped loving wrestling. They just couldn't do it full time because of their, you know, that's not how they made their money. So they started in WCW and then actually had a stint in WWE with Oddities.
Right.
And then I think they even appeared on TNA a couple of times. So, I mean, they've been in all the major organizations and seen how things run. As far as how the actual shows run and how they are to work for, I mean, it's extremely professional. I mean, they had put a lot of thought into their business and a lot of thought into this wrestling. It's not something that they just dabble with. I mean, and it's run really, really professional. And then once we get out there, it's certainly a variety show. If you like wrestling in any shape or form, then you need to check out a JCW show on the pay-per-view, because it is the epitome of variety. Every form of wrestling, whether it be technical wrestling, hardcore wrestling, comedic wrestling, it's all there in about a two-hour wrap-up. I mean, it's all wrapped into one.
Yeah, the next internet pay-per-view is May the 4th in Detroit. So if anybody's interested in either going to the event or ordering on internet pay-per-view, that's the route to go. Any ideas thus far how the internet pay-per-views have done, you know, in terms of buys, and is there a good buzz and interest in those type of shows?
Well, I know that the very first one that they had, they said that the numbers were better than any other internet pay-per-view or pay-per-view that had been done by wrestling companies other than WWE, TNA, and WCW. So any of the other organizations that aren't the major ones, it had beaten anything that they've done in any of their pay-per-views, and they were real excited about it. And every time that I go, it seems as if Violent J, who's the commissioner, and it's mostly, you know, him and Shaggy's brainchild, they are more and more excited. So it must be doing good as far as those numbers go. So they seem to be, I mean, like I said, every time I go, they're more excited about how it did. And the next pay-per-view, for me, I'm really excited. It's me and Sabu as a team versus Too Tough Tony and Rhino. So, I mean, this is a matchup that, you know, a year ago I never thought I'd be in a tag match with those guys. So it's really exciting for me. Kind of a contrast in styles. And I've wrestled Rhino a number of times, and he always brings a lot of energy to the matches. And him being from the Detroit area, really, it should be a really awesome match.
That's a great match to sell on internet pay-per-view. I believe the shows are like $5, so you know, you can watch a show from home and get a different brand of what you're getting on TNA or WWE, because I don't know about you, Rob, but it definitely seems to be that we're going away from, you know, a wrestling product to more of sports entertainment. So if you're looking more for, you know, wrestling, there is Juggalo show out there, there's Ring of Honor, and obviously, OVW has always been about wrestling. So if you're looking for, you know, pure wrestling, it's still out there in different forms.
Yeah, that's the one thing about the – it's kind of like it's entertaining wrestling instead of sports entertainment. That's the one thing. They haven't done any backstage interviews. I mean, there will be some guys talking in the ring before or after their match. But if you look at a 2 or 3 hour show, it's 80% of its wrestling matches.
You were talking about OVW, obviously Danny Davis's group, and you've been there recently. I know the heavyweight champion is Mike Mondo, who was in the Spirit Squad for a while, and they also have Domino, Cliff Compton, there as well. For some of us that don't get a chance to see OVW, describe what's going on there, and has it changed much since you were originally there under a developmental deal?
They got a lot of really good, talented guys that are kind of homegrown in Ohio Valley Wrestling. I mean, that's kind of still the premier school for learning how to wrestle in the country, and they have a number of events every month. I mean, they film a TV show on Wednesday, and they usually have a live event show Friday and Saturday. So they'll do anywhere from 150 to 200 shows a year. So it's a place where you can get experience. As far as Mondo being the champion, I mean, he's a guy who, he was really kind of underutilized in the Spirit Squad because he was one of five guys and it was really hard to stand out. Since he left the Spirit Squad, he really buckled down on his training regimen and his diet. Now he looks like $1 million. He's in great shape. And his wrestling is a lot more technical wrestling than what he ever got to show in the Spirit Squad. Then Cliff Compton, there's a guy that is a really good wrestler, and he another guy that is buckled down and he looks like a wrestler. He's in great shape. He let his hair grow out. And then, you know, him in the WWE, his stint there as Domino, he was kind of pigeonholed into a gimmick, which I know is, that he liked. It's just that sometimes when you have you can't really show your what you can do if you're limited to playing a role. So he kind of, you have a lot more freedom in OVW to show what you can do, and it's not a lot of moves that are off limit, and the matches are a little bit longer because they don't do as many pre-tapes or vignettes backstage.
Obviously, when you were originally in OVW, you were under a developmental deal, and OVW really was a territory that was producing the younger stars, yourself, Eugene, John Cena, Randy Orton, Brock Lesnar, Kurt Angle, all came from OVW, and it seemed like it was a natural fit. Danny Davis, a great trainer, as I said, has had a hand training in so many top superstars currently in professional wrestling. Why, in your opinion, why did the relationship between WWE and OVW stop, and do you ever see a scenario where WWE starts working with OVW in the future?
I could certainly see them working together in the future because they keep producing really good wrestlers. And over the last few years, since they haven't been a developmental, they still signed guys that were developed in OVW. As far as why they stopped using OVW as their developmental, I don't know the exact reason, so it would be my opinion. But my opinion would be that if I was running WWE, that part of it is they wanted to own the developmental themselves. Danny Davis has always owned OVW, and they used OVW for their developmental. But I think that since they became corporate and they're not a family-owned business, that everything from the beginning of someone's career to the end of their career, they would like to be able to put their stamp on it and own it. So the developmental now in Tampa, they built the building. They have their writers down there and their camera people, and everything is ran exactly the way they want it because it was their thought from the get-go, whereas the OVW had been around since 1994, and I had started there in 97 and already been wrestling for a few years before they came in and became a developmental. So I think they might have looked and seen how OVW ran for the years they were there and then tried to model FCW after OVW, but they own the facilities and they put everybody in place themselves instead of just coming into a business that was already running and then using them.
What's your opinion? Because you went through the developmental system. Obviously, they used to have a relationship with Rick Bassman in California. They used to have a relationship with Jody Hamilton in Atlanta. They have a relationship with a Puerto Rico group as well. They had a lot of different territories they were working with, and now they have just one territory, as you were saying, Steve Kern's group in Florida Championship Wrestling in Tampa. How do you feel about that? Because it seems to me that it would be such a better way to train is you can go from territory to territory, work in front of different people, different crowds, rather than, you're one of, say, 80 wrestlers down in Tampa, and you're only working with green guys in the same building and before the same fans. How do you feel about the way WWE approaches developmental, and do you think it's a good way to develop young talent?
Well, when I got into wrestling, it was toward the end of the territories in general. I mean, there's still the USWA and some other territorial wrestling that we grew up watching. And then WWE still got talent from smaller organizations. Like Rick Bassman had a big pool of talent to choose from because of the Los Angeles area. There's a lot of, professional athletes and models and bodybuilders and things like that, and a lot of guys came from there. And then they also had HWA, which Les Thatcher was well known as a great trainer. Now, I think what they're doing is that they're really not preparing people to get in the same business that I got into. So when you look at the business, how it's changed, I mean, it is sports entertainment now. It's not pro wrestling. They've taken wrestling kind of out of the name. So they prepare the guys to to wrestle and perform exactly the way they want them to in front of a WWE crowd. That's the difference. It's not like they have to go to different crowds and, you know, like different territories and these people like this type of wrestling. And, you know, like in the Northeast, the ECW fans, they like a different style of wrestling than maybe in Memphis, that we had a Memphis style. It's a little slower and not as many moves. Now they're just preparing the guys to wrestle in front of WWE crowds. And because even if someone likes a faster paced match and a Memphis style match, things that way, they're smaller crowds. When you go to an independent show, you'd be happy. You know, if there's 1,000 people there, that's fantastic. But in WWE, there's 5,000-6,000 people at a house show and then 15,000 people at TV, and they're used to watching WWE. And that's when they think of wrestling, they think of WWE. So they just train the guys in Florida to wrestle in front of WWE crowds, and the people don't have a lot of choices on what to like. So if they want to come, they're going to like what they're giving them. So I understand exactly why they do the things that they do. That would be my take on it, is they're just preparing the Florida guys to wrestle a WWE style that they want them to wrestle.
That's very well said, because I think there's a lot of fans of, say, Ring of Honor, where they do work, long matches, very technical. As I said, Ring of Honor is more of a wrestling product. So when guys like Colt Cabana or Tyler Black or Bryan Danielson come in, they expect them to be like top stars and work that style in WWE. And of course, that's not what they want. Even CM Punk, to a certain degree, had to change his style to adapt to, the WWE working environment, where it's definitely a more sports entertainment product than a wrestling product.
And it obviously works better than the rest of the companies, because they still have, you still make more money, and they still have bigger crowds. It's right. Really not a right or wrong. It's just different. I mean, that's why people start their own companies, is they have an idea of what they want to see in wrestling, and then you bring in the guys that you like to watch, and you're wanting to get an audience to follow those guys. WWE has their style, and you try to put your twist on the matches the best you can. But for the most part, what you see on television is a television product. It's a television show. You could go to the non-televised events, and you'll see Bryan Danielson maybe wrestle for 12 to 20 minutes and get to see the things that he can do and the things that WWE saw in him and these other promotions that got him hired in the first place. It's just on television, with the time constraints, and there's so much money involved with advertising, that you really have to learn how to have a 6 to 7 minute match with entrances that's entertaining, tells somewhat of a story, and then out of that match you further whatever storyline that you've got going on, because it's pretty easy to tell a story in 12 to 20 minutes. It's just most people can do that, but it's a lot harder to tell a good story in such – it's a short story. Tell a good short story in 4 minutes from bell to bell.
I definitely agree with that. In 2009, there were reports that you were approached by WWE to basically be a mentor to some of the younger talent. What was the offer, specifically, and why did you turn that one down?
Yeah, I've heard that I turned it down. I saw that online, and I went to the Raw show in Louisville to see some friends, and then obviously, if the opportunity to talk to John Laurinaitis was there, I would want to take it. And he saw me and said, "Hey, I want to talk to you later today. I've got an idea." And we sat down, and he explained to me what his idea was, is I would go on the road and wrestle newer guys and just, kind of get a feel for where they were at in their development, as opposed to in the developmental, they're pretty much wrestling each other. And that's something you'd mentioned, it's new versus new. And I've wrestled everybody from, Hacksaw Jim Duggan to Ric Flair to D.H. Smith, who was really new. So we talked about it, and sounded, like a good, something that would be good for me. I'd still be back on the road, get to wrestle guys. I like to wrestle newer guys. I mean, it's fun for me to have somebody and have them think, man, that was the best match I ever had up to this point in my career. So it always makes you feel good to help help someone, you know, learn something new. But really nothing came of it. I mean, he talked to me about it. He said he'd get back to me within the next week. I mean, he approached me. I didn't really approach him about that. Obviously, if I was going to approach him, it'd be about, hey, I would like to come back with a, you know, somewhat of a newer gimmick and go, you know, to the top, because that's where someone that's been in the business my length of time is looking to get that opportunity to be a main event guy. But when he mentioned that, it sounded good. And but then a few weeks later, he said, hey, let me talk to Mr. McMahon. You know, I'm really fired up about it. And then the next week, you still hadn't had an opportunity to get it okayed. And then finally, about 3 weeks later, he sent me an email and said that, you know, that he would keep me in mind. But at that time, they decided to go in a different direction. So it was never formally offered to where I turned it down. And I never really had an ask to do it. It was just something that he had the idea of. And I know he was fired up about it, because if it was up to him, he would have hired me that day. I mean, he was really excited about the opportunity to have someone go on the road. Because I've always been loyal, you know, a loyal kind of company guy. Never, you know, show up on time, never cause any trouble or anything like that. Because, I mean, if you love wrestling, you don't want to jeopardize your position. But as far as actually getting hired goes, I still stay in contact with him every few months, because it's something that I know he still wants to do. They haven't had anybody do it. They have people down in Florida, but they haven't had anybody just go on the road with newer guys. And, you know, I have a home here in New Albany. I'm from Indiana. All my family lives here. I mean, it would really have to be the right situation for me to be one of the guys to move down to Florida full time.
Now, you know, that's always a possibility that they could hire you in that capacity or that role. Are you still kind of waiting for the opportunity that Johnny Ace or Vince calls you and said, hey, Rob, we want you to come back to Raw, we want you to come back to SmackDown, we want you to be a WWE superstar again? Are you kind of waiting for that day to return, or are you kind of to the thought of maybe, you know, that's behind me, I'm going in different directions now?
Well, I can't say that I'm waiting on their call, because I've been staying busy with what I'm already doing. I mean, I love wrestling. And with JCW and New Focus Wrestling and the Next Level Wrestling and going to Australia and OVW and, you know, the independents. And I try to stay, on the independents. I really don't like to be gone for 2-3 days at a time to do one show. So I try to stay within a 3 or 4 hours from my home. So I've been staying really busy. But, I mean, you can't. When there's a big company out there and everybody knows it, you can't not think about wanting to maybe get another opportunity with them. Because I haven't had my second opportunity that a lot of guys over the years, it's like you always get that second chance. But for me, it's about today and what I'm already doing. If I think that any opportunities that I might get with WWE, they'll happen because of what I'm doing now. They'll see what I'm doing now, that I still stay, you know, in as good a shape as anybody that they have on TV as far as physically. I can still, you know, I can go 20 minutes with anybody. And, you know, I always stay in con man type of condition at all times, because that was my first love, was weightlifting and bodybuilding. So that's, you know, that's never going to be an issue. So it's just more or less, you know, you work hard, have fun, keep wrestling as much as you can, and then if anything with them is going to happen, it's just going to happen. You can't really think about it too much.
Yeah, we were talking to Chuck Palumbo last night, and of course he had a couple of stints with WWE. As you said, there's been a number of guys they brought in, they let go, they bring back, give them another stint. You know, in your mind, in your opinion, why haven't you had a second opportunity to return to WWE?
I just think it's timing. I mean, everything happens for a reason, and when the timing is right, you know, something will or will not happen. But I think that plays a big part of it. I think if anything, now the guys that are getting to the main event level are now slowly becoming guys that I helped when they were in the beginning, guys. You know, there hasn't been a big turnover of top guys in the last 3 or 4 years. You know, now with Edge retiring, there's been a constant turnover of undercard new talent. I mean, it seems as though now your biggest push comes your debut, whereas used to, you would start out as an opening match and build your way up to where by the time that you got an opportunity to be Intercontinental Champion or something like that, the fans already felt as if they were behind you and knew you and were helping you get there. Now, a lot of times a guy debuts in the top spot and it's almost like it's almost downhill from there if he can't handle it. You know, he'll be main eventing in 6 months or he'll be off TV completely. So there hasn't been a big turnover of top-tier talent. It's only mid to low-card talent. And they've got, with all the guys they have in developmental, you can debut anybody, and then they almost have to drop off the talent before they can, I don't think that, I wouldn't want to come back and start out at the bottom and work my way up. I mean, I want to come in and make an impact right away because I've already been there and have the experience, and the guys that are at the top now are guys that I have worked with, from the time they started. So I just think timing plays a big part of it. I mean,
Are you a big fan of the WWE product today? Do you watch it a lot? And, you know, if you do, what do you think of the current product storylines? Did you see WrestleMania? And maybe who do you see as kind of the rising star currently in WWE?
I watch every Monday. Fridays I don't watch as much just because you can't hardly help but find out what's going to happen ahead of time through being online. But with Raw, it's really exciting. It's live. So if somebody does something that looks pretty weird, I mean, you see it. If somebody's cutting a promo and they get off the beaten path, you hear it. Whereas SmackDown, if something happens and it's not that good, they'll just edit it out. And I think that's what's exciting. It feels like you're there watching it on, when it's live on Monday. That's the thing about the JCW pay-per-views is if it happens, it happens, and you're going to see it. If somebody says something, if you see a crazy move and somebody gets hurt or the fan jumps over the rail and gets beat, I mean, you're going to see it. It's not going to get edited out. It's live. And that's the thing about Raw that makes me want to watch it. As far as, up and coming stars, I mean, The Miz is already the champion, but he's still an up and coming star, because I think him having the championship has really got him noticed. And as much as a traditional wrestling enthusiast would be like, wow, why is that guy the champion? You know, he hasn't paid, his dues like somebody else has. I think he's been good for ratings. Here's a guy that everybody wants to see get beat, that for the most part nobody cheers for, and he's the champion, and he seems as if just about anybody on every given night could beat him. And I think that, that makes people want to watch him. they want to tune in and hope that he gets beat. As far as rising guys, I think John Morrison it seems as though he's rising. But if you look back on it, he's had the most traditional career so far of anybody on the roster. Even though he won Tough Enough, I mean, it was like 8 years ago. The guy's been on, he was at WrestleMania 20. The first one that I did, and then he was on WrestleMania 28. So he's been there for 8 years, and he has been in a tag team, and now he's a singles wrestler and won the Intercontinental Championship and the U.S. Championship as a heel, and now he's a babyface, and he's on the cusp of being in the main event. I mean, he is in the main event at the next pay-per-view, but there's a guy who is kind of having the closest rise to like a Shawn Michaels that you could think of. He's got the cool gear. He's got long hair. He's got cool music. He was in the tag team. He was the heel Intercontinental Champion. I mean, and he still seems like a young guy that hasn't been there that long, but you look back, his career's already twice as long as 80% of the wrestlers today. I mean, he's been on TV for 8 years.
Yeah, it seems like he's been the up-and-coming star for so long. I remember he was the ECW champion for a while. It looked like he was going to, finally, after he split up, Eminem was on the verge of being a main eventer. Every pay-per-view type main eventer, and it just doesn't seem like he's ever was quite dialed into that top spot. What do you think's holding him back, or is it just a company not totally confident in the guy to give him that top push?
Well, I don't think anything's holding him back, and I don't think that he's been held back. I think that he just hasn't been ready to be. I think, like I said, it's timing. They could have, when he was the ECW champion, they could have, you know, put him into that main event role, and I think by now he would already been out of the main event role. I think that by the time, when you look at his career, like you said, Shawn was a tag team wrestler for like 8 years.
Yep.
Bret Hart was a tag team wrestler and then Intercontinental Champion, and it was a long time before they – it looks as if with him, is he's the closest thing to the traditional, you know, earn your spot, make the people want to see you become the champion. If he wouldn't be as popular as he is now, I think, if he would already been in the main event. I think by the time he gets a one-on-one matchup at WrestleMania for the championship – by the time he wins it, if he's fortunate enough to win the championship, that the people will be like, man, there's a guy that we've seen start from, you know, John Hennigan with short hair and sideburns on Tough Enough all the way to being the world champion, and that they will feel like he earned it, and now they can stay behind him for a long time. And he's one of those guys kind of like John Cena that I think, 10 years from now, people are going to be going, man, I grew up watching him.
What's your thoughts on TNA? Do you watch it? And if you do, you know, what's your thoughts on their product? I would assume, you know, going by what you were saying, that you watch Raw because it is live, and that's certainly an aspect that I don't think is overrated. I think whether Raw is a hot product or not, you know, Monday night, something's going to could happen that you're not expecting it. Whereas SmackDown and Impact, you can always find the spoilers. But kind of in general, what's your thoughts on TNA and their product, the product they're currently presenting?
I like to watch TNA. I really like to watch all wrestling. If there's wrestling on TV, I, you know, can't hardly help but watch it. It's just that sometimes I, you know, I'll DVR it and fast forward through the commercials and then some of the promo segments because I truly like the in-ring products. But yeah, TNA, I mean, I think anybody in the wrestling business is always hoping that they'll break through and be competition for WWE, because when competition's out there, that's just more jobs for the wrestlers, and it's more excitement about the wrestling business and the industry. I think it makes the independent shows better and the crowds hotter. But they haven't been able to break through to that next level yet, and I'm not really sure why. I don't know if it's the – I know that when Raw was on Spike TV, it's not as strong of a channel as USA. It's just not as in as many homes. So even though it's a great channel for wrestling, it's still not as strong as USA Network, because our ratings went down when we went on Spike, just because it's not every hotel room has it, and not every community has it, the same as they do USA.
Have you been approached by TNA, or is there any possibility we could see Rob Conway in TNA?
I haven't really been approached by their office. Obviously, there's a lot of people in TNA that I've wrestled with and been friends with over the years. You know, I look at the situation that they have, and I see, you know, if it's not some place I've been really pursuing trying to go. And it's nothing against them as much as it's more of a, you know, I mean, I make a living wrestling, and that's something that I have to look at, is that they don't have that many shows. They really have their 4 TV tapings and then the 1 pay-per-view a month. So they have 5 shows, and then they don't have as many house shows as WWE has. So it would be more or less how it would be used. You know, if I did, you know, I haven't talked to them, so I can't really, you know, don't know how they would use me. But I know that if I wasn't going to be in that upper tier guy, then I'm certainly happy doing what I'm doing now. So, I mean, I'd have to go in and have a good six-figure base salary and have some type of guarantee that I was going to be, in a good spot and used the way I would want to be used. I mean, the WWE, even if you're, no matter how they use you, you're going to make a lot of money.
You know, on the flip side, of that, Rob, you know, if they have the tapings and they, you know, have the pay-per-views and they say it's four or five shows and then you do the house shows here and there, that's kind of attractive to certain wrestlers because obviously you're not on the road as much. And I can only, you know, I've never done the road schedule, obviously. I can't really imagine how hard it is to train, you know, eat well, constantly move, get on next flight, hotel. So I can see the lore of TNA is that, you know, it's not as popular as WWE, doesn't have the penetration that WWE has in a television perspective. But at the same time, it's attractive that, you know, I don't have to work as many dates and I'm not putting as much wear and tear in my body by working the fewer dates.
Oh, yeah. And the veteran guys that were there when WCW and WWE were both head-to-head, people made a lot of money. I mean, a lot of money. And then the guys that left WCW and they were still getting paid their guarantees. I mean, I could see where if you're a veteran that has made so much money that you just wanted to stay in the wrestling business, then less travel would be great. You still get to wrestle. You're not doing as much traveling. And as long as you're guaranteed a good amount of money, then that's attractive. For me, I like to wrestle. So I can remember when we would get a week off for Christmas, where they would film the best of Raw. And, you know, so you're off for like 14 days. And after about three, you know, I'm used to being home for 3 days, but after four, five, 6 days, I was bored out of my mind. I mean, I didn't wrestle because I had to. I mean, obviously you have to make a living, but I enjoy doing it. I like going to a different gym in every town. It just becomes a lifestyle of get off the plane, go eat, go to the gym, go to the building, drive to the next town and do the same thing over and over. It never gets old. So I always enjoyed the travel and enjoyed the more you work, the more money that you make.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What was your best year in WWE? Was it a year that you were in La Resistance as a tag team champion?
Yeah, I was.
Okay.
The thing about that, because we were the champions, we were on every show. We were featured in every show. A lot of times we main evented some of the house shows too. Like when Goldberg was the champion, they would put him in tag matches and earlier in the night. And then we would go out against the Dudleys and be a tables match in the main event. So we still got, you know, a really good spot. Yeah, and it was the gimmick, you know, the character was such an easy character to play and it was so much fun and we got such a good response that it never got old.
Well, I think you kind of back to when you kind of broke in the late 90s with OVW. Talk about some of the talent that was there. I know you worked, obviously, with Nick Dinsmore, Eugene. There was the Bashams were there, Damaja. Obviously, it was a springboard for a lot of guys to get into WWE. Kind of talk about, you know, who was there, who you worked with, and maybe what your relationships are with those guys that were there at the time that you originally trained with OVW.
Well, originally, it was me and Nick Dinsmore and Doug Basham were probably the three main guys in OVW, and it was not a developmental territory. It was just the Danny Davis School of Professional Wrestling, and then they ran their shows as Ohio Valley Wrestling. And it was in a warehouse that later on got condemned in Jeffersonville, which is about eight or nine minutes from my house. It just so happened that we were in the right place at the right time when Jim Cornette, who was a lifelong friend of Danny Davis, wanted to retire from being on the road and then move back to his hometown of Louisville. And it's like him and Danny and Jim Ross, I think it was their kind of brainchild to have a developmental territory because they saw that the regular territories were dying off. So once that became a developmental territory, the first guys they sent us was a really big guy by the name of Russ McCullough and Rico Constantino. They were the first two developmental guys that were sent to Louisville. And at the time, I didn't have a contract. None of us did. So it wasn't until 2000 that I got a contract. So I was working with developmental talent for about a year and year and a half before I got signed myself. And then it was just they sent us guys from all over the country. And so you went from Jeffersonville in this warehouse with all local guys that looked like local independent wrestlers. And then all of a sudden, we got Randy Orton, Brock Lesnar, Batista, Ron Waterman, Rico Constantino, Sylvester Turkai. Then they sent us Mark Jendrick and Sean O'Hare. We had Big Show and Mark Henry. I mean, so you can imagine we're having these shows in a warehouse in Jeffersonville that later would be multiple world champion main eventers at WrestleMania. We had John Cena and Victoria and Jazz, Nydia and Maven. I mean, it was a nonstop of great athletes. And then all of a sudden there's an influx of these, 6'5", 250-pound muscular guys at our OVW shows. And people had never seen anything like it. I mean, this area had an influx of all these guys. And the next thing you know, I mean, people are just starstruck all over the place. They're like, wow, do you wrestle? And I'll be like, yeah. And they're like, man, I just met the Big Show at Thornton's. I mean, it was a fun time, and everybody worked so hard. I mean, I can see why every guy that I named there and girl made an impact on wrestling. And they all came from a background. If it wasn't pro wrestling background, it was an athletic background. That the harder you work, the further you're going to get. So the practices that we had were so intense. Just running the ropes was competitive. I mean, there were days when we had to stop practicing an hour and a half in because the mat was so sweaty that you couldn't run on the mat anymore.
I want to ask you about Jim Cornette. Obviously he's labeled a genius, and we've seen him so many years in professional wrestling, a manager. Obviously been involved in the booking process. Who is Jim Cornette, and what is he really like behind the scenes?
Jim Cornette is somebody who has loved the wrestling business since the first time he ever watched it. And he was never a wrestler. He started out as a ringside photographer and then a manager and then eventually opened his own company. I mean, this guy lives, breathes. I mean, everything he does is pro wrestling. He doesn't watch baseball or football or basketball or anything like that. He loves pro wrestling. He loves the history of pro wrestling. He loves collecting pro wrestling memorabilia. I mean, if you just think of Jim Cornette and you think of passion for professional wrestling. He's like most people, when you first start watching it and you fall in love with it, that's what you vision professional wrestling being. So as the product changes, sometimes you're resistant because you got into watching it for a reason. It's, I got to watching it in the 80s and that's what I liked. And then you have to adapt as the times change. But he, behind the scenes, he just loves pro wrestling. He has a passion for it. And then that passion is what you always hear about. You always hear stories about him yelling and screaming, and it's because he loves it so much that he wants other people to love it that much. And when you have a match, he wants you to feel like you're having a main event WrestleMania match if it's in front of 500 people on a Sunday or Thursday night. He expects you to put all your effort and thoughts into that match the same as he does.
Now, I know he had the tantrums back in the day. A lot of it when he was working with WWE as the developmental territory, he'd have guys that he was very high on that WWE would bring up to the main roster. And I can kind of think back to a guy like Matt Morgan was a guy he was really high on. He thought he'd be a main event WrestleMania kind of guy, and he felt like they brought him up too early. I think he had the heartthrobs back in the day. He thought that was a great tag team, but they needed a lot more time in OVW, needed more time and training. So did that cause friction with WWE? Were you there at that time with some of the guys, and you knew some of the guys that I remember, like, Brock Lesnar was a guy that was there for a while, and you know he was very high on him, and obviously you see where he went. He did main event at WrestleMania. So it seemed to me when you know, Jim Cornette is a genius. You said he lives and breathes wrestling, and when you know he had guys that he knew were going to be, you know, superstars, and then WWE would bring them up to television way too quickly, it seemed like it caused friction. So I always kind of wondered if that maybe was part of the reason they broke away from OVW.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know any reasoning on why they broke away from OVW other than economics of, I think it looked better for the investors to know that their developmental territory was in Tampa, because a number of the top level wrestlers and agents live in Tampa, so that they could go, you know, they didn't have to spend as much money to have guys fly to Louisville to evaluate talent. It's right there in Tampa. Pretty sure like John Laurinaitis and at least two or three of the agents live in Tampa, and I know like John Cena and Edge and a number of the top talent live there, so they could stop in at any time and check it out. And it's, I'm sure it looks a lot more glamorous to the stockholders to say, hey, well, we're going to start this developmental territory. It's in Tampa. That's where Steve Kern already lives. He's one of our main agents. All the agents live there. Most of the talent live there. I think that was, and we'll own it. And what we will be, we don't have to go and tell them, hey, we were thinking this. You just tell the people running it, because they work directly for WWE, this is what we want. And there's no question about it. Whereas I think with OVW and Jim Cornette, even though Jim Cornette ultimately would do what the WWE asked of him, he would definitely give his opinion. I mean, he wasn't a yes man. He wasn't there to do that. He was there to get them prepared for the WWE. But he did it his way, and then when they would, you know, when they would ask for somebody, he would definitely give his opinion on this is what I think that we should do with him, because, and then go from there. But I don't think that Jimmy really played any part in them, you know, going away from OVW, or I don't even think that Danny or OVW would, at any time was not successful for them. I think that they saw an opportunity business-wise to open their own company that they owned in the town they wanted to be in and start fresh and try to produce their own stars without, you know, giving somebody who OVW that they don't own the credit for it.
I want to ask you about Nick Dinsmore. Of course, he was your one of your partners in OVW, and I think I either read or heard an interview where you said you probably worked him like 500 matches, and so it's like you know this guy like the back of your hand. What's your thoughts on, obviously they gave him a character that I think was very limited, you know, what they could do with him. I mean, to me, when he came up, he was a guy that a lot of people were raving about, you know, Nick Dinsmore. I know Jim Cornette was very high on him. Maybe thoughts on, you know, how he came up, the character they gave him, and what's his perspective now on his career that, you know, looking back, that he did have the WWE run, but, you know, he kind of got into a, you know, got kind of labeled with that character, and they didn't really have anything for him, you know, post-Eugene.
The misconception, I think, on that is that they gave him that character. He sat down in a meeting with Vince McMahon, and Vince asked him, where do you see yourself fitting in the roster? What would you want to do? And Nick came up with the character Eugene right then, and he'd already thought of it. But he is the one that pitched the idea of him being Eugene. His original idea was a wrestling savant, that he might not be able to know what a checkbook is. He might not be able to drive. He may not be able to do other things in life, but he can watch a wrestling match, and he can go out and mimic everything that he had ever seen. And that was the original idea for Eugene. He could tell you that Pat Patterson won the first ever Intercontinental Championship in Rio de Janeiro in a year, but he wouldn't be able to tell you, you know, what city he's in. So it's kind of, people always say, you know, he was kind of saddled with that gimmick. Well, I mean, he had been in the business for a long time as Mr. Wrestling Nick Dinsmore, and he'd been under contract from 1999, and that was like 2004 that he debuted as Eugene. So he was in a position where he was as developed as he was going to get. I mean, he was a better wrestler than 90% of the wrestlers in the world. It was a matter of coming up with a character that they could use on television. And, I mean, he really had a great run as Eugene. I mean, he still does. I mean, he's Eugene all over the world. He's never a weekend that goes by that people don't have Eugene come to a show. So, I mean, I think that he thanks his lucky stars every day that he came up with the idea of Eugene as opposed to being saddled with it, because there's a lot of really good wrestlers out there that never have anywhere near the success as what Eugene has.
Sure.
You know, just a good, solid technical wrestler that's 6 foot tall and 230 pounds that, you know, has a good look, but wears black boots and black trunks, and they can have a good match with anybody. But for the most part, they don't have action figures and video games, and he had his own bear and T-shirts and had his own Eugene pay-per-view. And, I mean, there's a lot of things that there's a lot more positives that came out of him being Eugene than came out, you know, than any negatives.
Now, you were saying that, you know, Vince McMahon came to him and said, you know, where do you see yourself fitting in the roster? That's kind of interesting. Obviously, does Vince and the creative staff, do they often go to a wrestler and say, hey, you know, where do you see yourself fitting in? And did you have some creative input into the characters that you portrayed on WWE television?
I don't think that they come to guys and ask them that very much. I think that they had a lot of respect for Nick, and he'd been under developmental for 5 years. And they didn't have any ideas for him. So I believe they sat down with him, and it was giving him the opportunity to basically say, why are we still employing you? What's your idea for yourself? Because we've got nothing for you. And he had his, you know, he had his answer ready. If that day comes and they asked you at any point, why should we keep you with us? What can you do for us? You better have a good answer ready, because the developmental system, generally, they're looking to develop you for, you know, 18 months and then have you on TV. I mean, I was under developmental for, you know, 3.5 years. It was getting to the point where either they're going to have to use me or they're going to let me go and develop somebody else, because as far as wrestling skill had gone, I was about as developed as I was going to get. And Nick was, I mean, how much more developmental can he have? The guy was probably the best wrestler that we had on the roster in OVW for years. It was just a matter of coming up with a character that they felt would be entertaining.
You came up to WWE television. I believe you debuted as a conquistador. Is that correct?
Well, I'd been on television a couple times, and just Rob Conway doing undercard stuff, you know, losing to D'Lo Brown and to Randy and to Baldo and different guys. And then me and Nick actually debuted as the Conquistadors against Rey Mysterio and Billy Kidman in a tag match. And the reason they had us beat Conquistadors was is they really liked our wrestling. They didn't have any characters for us, so they wanted to put us out there where people wouldn't know it was us so that we could have a good match with Kidman and Mysterio. I don't think that they ever questioned our ability to wrestle. It was just finding a character that would be entertaining and have legs that could stay on television.
How hard is it to wear a mask in the ring? Because I often talk to people that, like Jerry Lynn, I remember, like, you have no idea how hard it is when you're so used to not wearing a mask, and you put the mask on, it's so harder to breathe, it's so harder to see everything. How difficult or how challenging is it to wear a mask in the ring?
It can be difficult. I've wore a mask a couple times in OVW, just kind of wrestling is not Rob Conway, and it was really hard. But the Conquistador mask that they had for us had a little bit bigger eyelets than the ones I'd used before, but yeah, definitely there's a claustrophobic feeling, and even though you can see, it still limits your peripheral vision, and it's really odd to be when you're out there, and there's, you know, I believe there was probably like 12,000 people there that night, and you really feel as if you can see them, but they can't see you, even though they can see the rest of you. It's kind of like looking through one of those one-way mirrors, it kind of feels like.
You, of course, became part of La Resistance. Three-time tag team champion was Savon Grenier. When they put you into that group, did you have a good idea that this was going to be a successful run and that would ultimately end with three successful title reigns?
I really felt good about it. Yeah, I mean, I knew both of them, and I knew their gimmick had so much heat, and it was just perfect timing for La Resistance. And at the time, both of them were really inexperienced. Savon had been like less than a year into the business. And Renee had been wrestling for a few years, but he was only 19 years old. So, I mean, they really put me with them. It was going to be an avenue for me to be a singles wrestler, but it was also because I'd been doing it for quite some time to be able to help in the input of the matches and in the development of both of them as wrestlers. And I just I got along with them really well. We had similar looks. And then, you know, as far as the character goes, I mean, obviously here's two French guys that are out there speaking French, and they're going to have heat. But I knew that I could really have the most heat because I'm an American siding with the French. So it hits a lot closer to home, you know, kind of denouncing your own heritage and going with the French. I mean, you'd expect two French guys to be pro-French, but not a guy from New Albany, Indiana.
It seemed like, you know, that was just kind of getting off the ground, even though it was a couple of, you know, he had, I believe, three title reigns, and then they kind of went a different direction with La Resistance. Is that because, you know, Vince is not a big fan of tag team wrestling, or what was the story behind kind of splitting you guys up?
The main reason that they decided to split us up, in general, obviously, first, Renee went to SmackDown, and me and Savon stayed as a team. And I think that's because he was the biggest of the three. He was the youngest, and they really saw an opportunity to push him. He went right into a storyline with John Cena. So that was a promotion for him. That was him to be able to break out and do his own thing. Me and Savon, we loved the tag team. We loved being in La Resistance. So we would do it tomorrow. We liked it that much. The reason they split us up was because of Muhammad Hussain. They brought in Muhammad Hussain with Daivari, and they had two, you know, pretty similar characters, but at the time with what they could have an even stronger character than we could. I mean, you know, the French or French Canadians have a certain stigma behind them that they think they're better than everybody else in the world. But at the time, the Arab character that Muhammad Hussain was playing really had the potential to have main event WrestleMania one-on-one caliber heat and potential. And what would happen was is they would put us, we would be match, you know, five or six, and they would put Muhammad Hussain out there in semi-main events. And for 15 or 20 minutes that we were out there, people would chant USA. I mean, we had a strong gimmick. We could lose every night. Didn't matter what happened to us, win or lose. The next time we came out, people, as soon as our music hit, they would chant USA. And what was happening was is that people had been, they were kind of USA'd out by the time Muhammad Hussain came out there. We had such a similar characters that they really wanted to push that as a main event singles character. And you couldn't do it on the same show. You usually only have one anti-American character, you know, in one show.
When they broke you away and then you got the singles push as the con man, I really liked that. I thought that was really gonna take off. I mean, your name is Conway and you're the con man. And we had a number of questions asking about your theme music, you know. did you pick that one out, or where did that music come from? It's such a catchy tune. It's one of those tunes that you hear and it's like it's caught in your head. And when I think of the con man character, I obviously think of that theme song.
Well, the first time the song played, I was in a match, and I was right after Kerwin White, if you remember the short stint that Chavo had as Kerwin White.
Right.
And his match had just, he just had his match, and I guess that he had exited side ramp at the show. If you notice, a lot of times the guys, after their match, they don't come right back up to the Titantron. They'll kind of go to the side. So after his match, music played. I was standing there, and I was waiting on him to come back through the curtain. And they were like, go, go. And I was like, I'm waiting on my music. And they're like, this is your music. Because it sounded so much like his that I thought it was his music. So I was literally walking to the ring, listening to this song for the very first time, thinking, what is this music? I mean, it was catchy, but it was, the fans never reacted to it. They listened to it. So I think that your music sometimes really adds to a character. It sometimes doesn't detract from it too much, but it certainly can add. And I don't feel like my music did anything to add to my character. I think it was the one case where I think it actually hurt my character. Because,
that's interesting.
And it wasn't because of the words. It wasn't because it wasn't a catchy tune. It's just that when we came up with the Con Man, I was in the best shape of my life. I was probably the leanest guy in the history of Raw, if not for sure at the time of Raw. So I had a certain look that was different than it was when I was in La Resistance. I'd gotten with a strength coach, was really, I mean, I had dieted like crazy. It's like I was getting ready for a bodybuilding contest. I mean, I was trying to look as different as I could possibly look from when I was in La Resistance. And when I was in OVW, I was the Iron Man. The Iron Man was has a stronger style than what I wrestled in La Resistance. And that was basically the Con Man character was going to be the Iron Man, but without having to go through all the copyright laws and stuff of using the name Iron Man. So when that music hit, it did not say, this guy's coming to the ring to beat somebody up and be a main event guy. It was more like a catchy little lounge tune that kind of made you kind of snicker, but you didn't really take him that serious. And I think that really deflated the crowd. I mean, if they were on a high before my match, you know, and then boom, my music hit, they were just like, huh? I mean, you couldn't even boo it. There wasn't enough of a beat to even get a chant going. I mean, like with Kurt Angle, they would chant, you suck, because his music was still upbeat enough.
Right.
But, you know, it wasn't exactly time to play the game. You know?
Right.
It was dun, 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 dun. I mean, it's kind of a joke. I mean, it was funny, and the words are, you know, and it was flattering that they wrote a song specifically for my character, but, you know, it definitely didn't portray the character that I thought that we had gone over, you know.
I think that's very telling, because I, you know, I grew up, you know, really watching wrestling in the 80s, and when somebody would come to the ring, you know who it was because it was a theme music, and nowadays I think there's a lot of more generic songs. You know, to me, a lot of the characters are much more, I don't want to say bland, but they're not as colorful as they used to be. And when they have the theme songs, they're not as catchy as they were back in the 80s. So I think that, I definitely think that can hinder a person if they don't have a real catchy theme song. If somebody's coming to the ring and I'm not sure who it is because I don't know the theme song or don't recognize it or it's not one of my favorite songs, it's like, okay, who is this guy? So
when
La
Resistance's music came on,
you knew
like
who was coming out.
They
yeah.
knew we were coming out.
Yep.
The place immediately booed. They didn't care who we wrestled. We always came out first. They didn't care who we were going against. They just wanted somebody to come down there and punch us in the face.
Right.
Somebody please kick this guy's butt. I mean, it didn't matter. It could have been somebody they'd never seen before. But if once Sylvain got the mic and started singing the anthem, if anybody's music played, it could be two guys they'd never seen before. If they came straight to the ring, people were like, okay, good. Somebody's going to shut them up. And you knew when our music hit what you were getting. Here's two guys with flags and robes and that are arrogant, good-looking guys that believe in themselves and they believe that their country is better than your country. Somebody just shut these guys up. When my music hit, as the con man, it was like, hey, let's all be quiet and listen to this music. Because it wasn't that loud that you could cheer over it, and there was no rhyme or reason to it. It was just kind of like an unpopular form of music.
When your career ended with WWE in May of 07, they, of course, you know, announced your release and the usual, we wish you best in future endeavors. How did you learn of your release, and what were you told about why they released you and what the future would hold for you with the company?
For me, John just called. I always had a good relationship with John Laurinaitis, and he just told me, he said, hey, the creative doesn't have anything for you. I mean, it's not a phone call he likes having to make, and we're going to do, you know, invoke our 90-day clause, which you have 90 days where they still pay you, but you can't be on any other television show. And it was pretty straightforward. He said, you know, it was nothing I did. There was nothing, no bridges burned. It was pretty straightforward. And I kind of had a feeling earlier in the day I saw where a couple other guys had been released. And the way the contracts work, mine had rolled over at the beginning of the year, so I was getting a full pay every week from January 1st all the way till, you know, May. I was actually making more money, probably because I wasn't on the road. I was getting paid every week with no expenses. You know, but the only shocking part to it was, is like maybe 3 weeks prior to that, I had received a call that I needed to get new La Resistance gear because they were going to put me and Sylvain back together on SmackDown. So I was actually having new stuff made. And it was, I already had new trunks and was getting a new robe made when I got the call that I was getting released. So I, you know, had kind of had that idea that I was going to, I'd never been on SmackDown. So I was going to go to SmackDown and we would redo La Resistance there. And, so that was the only shocking thing. As a business move, I totally understood the fact that I was getting paid to do nothing. So they released me, and then creative came up with something in 6 months. Unless I was wrestling somewhere else that was very lucrative, then why would I not want to go back to a company that had taken care of me for 8 years?
How does it feel to be an action figure?
Man, it's pretty awesome. You know, when it first happens, you're on the road all the time, you kind of see them and it's neat, but you're so busy. I mean, that's the thing. When you're on the road, you're so busy, you can't even appreciate the stuff that you're doing. You're on pay-per-views. You're getting action figures. You get those little sports cards. I mean, that's awesome. When you get in a card, you get on a video game. You don't have time to play the video game. You don't have time to go to the store to even see your figure. But knowing that you have one is really cool because that's kind of the measure, even in the wrestler's minds, of when you've made it. You've made it when you have an action figure and you're on a video game. That's always been our, like, wow, you know. But it wasn't until I got released and then you get to go do independent shows. At the WWE shows, you never really get to interact with the fans. You don't get to go to a merchandise table. You just go in the back and wrestle and then leave after the show. But at the independent shows, you get there early, you get to, you know, you talk to people before the show, you have a merchandise table, you're shaking people's hands, taking pictures, they bring your action figure and have you sign it and ask questions, and you kind of lose sight of a lot of things when you're on the road all the time, that you really get to kind of stop and smell the roses after the fact. And there's a lot of merchandise you never even seen, and, you know, you're... Now I saw online where they had I'm on a poker chip, but it was only released in Europe. Or there's I've got an action figure, it's a six pack with me and Randy Orton and John Cena and Renee and Shelton and Charlie, and it was only released in Quebec. I mean, stuff like I would have never,
wow.
I still would have never looked that up. I wouldn't have, you don't have time to do stuff. I mean, people talk about the road life, but it's literally like you got to get to the next town and just do the next thing. And then sometimes guys lose sight of when you're on the road and you get a phone call from somebody or a text and you think, man, you know, a guy wants me to give him a call. I just talked to him last week. And then you say, then you figure out, man, it's been 6 months since I talked to him. You know, because you just, that's the thing, is that you lose, you sometimes, if they're not people that you're traveling with and you don't see them every week at the shows, you can lose track of your friends. And it's not because you don't want to talk to them. You're just busy. I mean, when you come home, I would come home on Tuesdays, pretty much sleep, go work out, then have Wednesday to do whatever. And then Thursday, I was getting ready to go back on the road Friday. And that was every week.
That's a pretty crazy schedule. And as I said, I don't know how some of you guys do it, you know, train and eat right on the road. That's a grueling schedule. I mean, to do it year after year and then get those nagging injuries that you can't quite heal up and, okay, Rob, we need you for this show and you're flying out to the next show. And it's, I guess, you know, how is your body doing after 14 years in the wrestling business?
Let me get close enough to some wood to knock on wood. Knocking on wood, but I'm doing really good. I mean, I've had a few things over the years, but nothing that really kept me out any extended time. Since I got left WWE, had a slight tear in both calves, which kind of sidelined me for about 2.5 months each. But other than that, you know, I try to pick and choose, you know, when it comes to risk reward of moves, you know, that I use. But for the most part, you know, I just tried to treat my body as good as I can so that it'll treat me good. And I've been fortunate to stay major injury free all this time.
We're finishing up with Rob Conway. A couple more questions. And we wanted to ask you, I know you worked with Edge. Obviously, you won one of the tag titles in a match with Edge and Chris Benoit. Maybe your reaction to Edge retiring from pro wrestling.
Man, what a great career he's had. And he's a young guy. I believe he's 37 or 38.
Right.
I mean, it's sad to see him have to retire and not just retire when he wanted to. But on the other hand, he's still a really young guy that made a lot of money in the business, and he's done every possible thing that you could do in wrestling. I mean, when you look at if you had to write out a career – and he's 11 times a world heavyweight champion. He's probably won more titles in WWE than anybody else between intercontinental championships and tag team titles.
Right.
He's, you know, as far as I know, everybody likes him. I mean, he's a dude that, you know, just always been a good guy. To be able to have that good of a career, to make that kind of money, to be that successful, to everybody say, what a nice guy. You know, he had a great career. I'm happy that he's able to get out of and retire with still his health and have made a lot of money and still have that money. And, you know, he looks great. I'm sure he'll be an ambassador for wrestling for years to come. So, I mean, really, you hope that you could, you know, have as good a career as he's had and be able to be done with the wrestling business before it's done with you, because he still, I'm sure he has plenty of money, which, you know, ultimately when you get out of it, that's what you're hoping at the very end, that you can kind of look back on your career and it was really successful and he wouldn't have to do much of anything else if he doesn't want to.
Right. Are you a fan of mixed martial arts?
I enjoy watching it, yes. Yes.
Do you have a favorite wrestler? I mean, a favorite fighter?
I would probably be Brock, just because I've known him since he started in pro wrestling, and he's so big and strong and athletic, and I've just, like I said, seen him from the start. I mean, he's an amazing athlete, been able to really, he is popular. I mean, he's definitely, when he's fighting at a level of you know, it's kind of like when Mike Tyson was boxing. You're just like, man, I want to see this. It might not last long, but there's going to be a lot of action while it's going on.
You know, you were talking about, like, competition, obviously. You know, since we don't have WCW anymore, there's not a real strong competition to WWE. Do you kind of consider UFC competition to WWE?
It's competition for WWE in the fact of you're competing for the entertainment dollar. I mean, people only have so much money to spend, and they can spend it when it comes to the pay-per-views, either on UFC or WWE, or, you know, or obviously TNA. And more so, I think, at the commercial level than even at the home level, because now, like, different bars and restaurants will carry pay-per-views. And I think a lot more of them now are carrying the UFC pay-per-views than the wrestling pay-per-views. So I definitely think the pay-per-view market UFC has cut into. As far as the live events, I think it's adults that are going to UFC. I think there's a lot of teenagers and kids that go to see WWE, so I don't think it hurts them there. I think as far as action figures and things like that, I think the UFC action figures are collected by collectors and the UFC fans and not kids as much. So I think the main competition is for the pay-per-view dollar of the adult.
We're finishing up with Rob Conway. And before we let you go, Rob, plug anything you want to plug, website. I know you're on Facebook. You're not on Twitter. So anybody's looking for Rob on Twitter, if it says Rob Conway, of course, there's a poser out there. But plug what you have, your website, upcoming shows, and let the fans know how they can get in contact with you, or maybe a promoter that would like to book you for a future show.
My website is theironmanrobconway.com. You can contact me through there for any type of appearances, whether it be wrestling or autograph sessions or the comic book conventions or speaking at a group setting. Other ways to see me right now are through psychopathiclive.com, and that's the juggalochampionshipwrestling.com as well. And you can see me every other Wednesday live on pay-per-views, and then after the pay-per-views they have encore performances. It's only $5. You can click on it, use PayPal, and watch those shows for $5. You can contact me also through ovwrestling.com, because you know, I definitely have an affiliation with them. nextlevelwrestling.net, I can be contacted through them, and that's out of Knoxville. And then just be, you know, if you want to see me and you want to see me live, I'd appreciate it. I love to come to the shows. I usually get there early and stay late. Whether there's 200 people there or 1,000, I mean, that's what I'm known throughout the independent organizations is I wrestle just as hard regardless. Every you're only as good as your last match. And that's one thing that I hear from the promoters is that, wow, we really didn't expect you to go out and do the things that you did tonight. We really appreciate you treating, you know, our promotion like it was WWE. So, I mean, I kind of am not one of the, I like to go out there. Once I get my boots on, I'm an athlete. I mean, I come from an athletic background of let's go out there and go as hard and as long as that they'll let us and go at it. So those are different ways to reach me, but the IronManRobConway.com is my own website, and I have merchandise on there and then more information about upcoming appearances. And I just let the fans know, wrestling fans, and I've said this before, but the guys that get into wrestling are the biggest wrestling fans out there. I'm a huge wrestling fan. People always come up to me and they say, you don't understand what a big wrestling fan I am. And I say, no, I do, because I've dedicated the last 14 years of my life to doing it. I still watch stuff on YouTube. I still watch old videos. I mean, I live and breathe wrestling, you know, and I understand. I'm not coming from a point of view of it's us and them, that I'm a wrestler and you're a wrestling fan. I'm a wrestling fan that got into wrestling and loves it just as much today as I did when I was watching it for the first time. So you can I love, you know, I end up talking to people for 30 minutes about wrestling, and they're like, oh, I didn't mean to take your time. I said, man, I can talk about this stuff all day.
I could talk to you all day too, Rob. I mean, this has been a great interview. We really enjoyed it. And as I said, definitely check out Rob online if you want to book him for an appearance or a wrestling match. He's definitely available. And as you said, you can check out Rob every other Wednesday night for the Juggalo Championship Wrestling Show. So definitely do that. And Rob, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. This has been a great interview.
I certainly appreciate you, and I look forward to hearing from people who heard this and read it on IronManRobConway.com.
Sounds good. Have a great day, Rob. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.